Joining us this morning, we had the opportunity to talk with the director of the EPA. Also, many listeners would formerly know him as the former Attorney General for the state of Oklahoma, Scott Pruitt. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Charlie, it's good to be with you.
And first of all, you are in town for a various number of reasons, mainly connected with the Waters of the U.S. bill, but you're in to talk to the folks at Phillips and ConocoPhillips and that sort of thing.
Lots of activities. These two or three days that we're here, and as you indicated, spent some time at Phillips here in Bartlesville. They've got an R&D facility that is very, very high-tech and impactful with respect to water quality issues and air quality issues. So we had a good visit out at Phillips 66, and that dialogue is helpful to us, you know, as we engage in rulemaking. So that was a tremendous time that we spent out there on campus. But as you indicated, we're also talking about the Waters United States rule and how it impacts Oklahoma, farmers and ranchers, land use decisions, oil and gas. But it's not just Oklahoma. We're on a state action tour across the country where we're probably touching 15 to 20 states over an extended period of time, and glad to be in Oklahoma developing the record.
Well, it's certainly nice to have you back in northeast Oklahoma, and I'm sure you'll venture into southeast Kansas somewhere along the process. First of all, just in some kind of chronological order, you mentioned rulemaking and kind of learning what's going on out in the real world, like what's going on at the Research Center.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important, in fact, extremely important for agencies, whether it's the EPA or any agency, as they do rulemaking, that they actually hear the voices of people across the country as they're impacted on the ground. And you know, when an agency adopts a rule, as they did previously with the Waters of the United States rule, and define it as a puddle, a dry creek bed, or a drainage ditch, that's something that the people in Oklahoma looked at and said, well, that doesn't make any sense at all, and I agree with them. And so we're now reversing that rule, as you know, Charlie, withdrawing that, and now we're going forward to get the definition right so that we respect land use decisions and respect the role of the states and respect how that those decisions are being made across the country. So Utah, the second most dry state in the country. I was in Utah last week and was in Minnesota the day after. Obviously, there's a lot more water in Minnesota than there is Utah. So the needs in Minnesota, the challenges in Utah, are dramatically different. We need to hear from those folks as we engage in rulemaking and deal with these water quality issues.
Well, and if I remember my conversations with probably a good friend of yours, Senator Inhofe, he tends to emphasize the words navigable in all that process.
Yes, I mean, that fits the history of what the definition is. I mean, the Clean Water Act was intended to be very specific and to provide jurisdiction to the federal government, EPA, in certain areas. And so when you define a water of the United States as including a dry creek bed in southwest Oklahoma or a drainage ditch in Bartlesville. You know, when I was in Utah last week, I went to a development, stood outside the development with someone from the Army Corps of Engineers, and he pointed me to an ephemeral drainage ditch and said, that is a water of the United States. And I said, well, it's not going to be anymore. But that's what I'm saying. An application, the EPA coming in and extending jurisdiction power over those kinds of things, just simply inconsistent with the Clean Water Act, and it was truly all about power. So we're trying to make sure that we get that fixed, and we are getting it fixed, and we're hearing the voices of folks in Oklahoma and across the country.
Well, and I'm sure there are creek beds or, for that matter, lakes or alleged lakes all across the country where for the vast majority of the year it is dirt that you can walk across, but during the rainy season or maybe during the spring melts and floods, there is a significant amount of water.
There may be standing water, but is it connected to a, as you put it, a navigable stream of water? And that's a question. How often is it standing? Is it perennial or is it seasonal versus intermittent? So there's all those kinds of questions that are being asked and answered as we develop this definition. But at the end of the day, the senator, I think, said it well. I mean, our focus should be on providing objective measurements so that people know where federal jurisdiction begins and ends. Because if you're in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and you're wanting to engage in a land use decision to build a subdivision or farm and ranch or oil and gas activity, you want to know whether you have to go get a permit from the EPA. Because if you don't know that and you find out afterwards and you get fined $37,000 plus a day, up to $50,000 a day, that's obviously something that's not good. And so we don't want uncertainty in the marketplace. We want folks knowing where jurisdiction begins and ends. And the last administration took this view, we're just going to cover everything. And that's not appropriate. We're going to make sure the definition is consistent with the statute, consistent with the Constitution, consistent with the state authority and land use decisions being made by private property owners. I mean, that's been the history. I mean, the province of the states and province of the municipalities and private property owners, those land use decisions have been made at the local level, not in Washington, D.C.
Does that also expand to something that we have a fair number of in Bartlesville, and that is floodplains?
Well, that's part of the discussion, yes. I mean, I think all those things have to be asked and answered and evaluated. But ultimately, the goal here is to make sure that there are objective criteria so that we know, if it's a wetland as an example, when is a wetland considered a water of the United States? Utah talked about indistinguishability with a navigable water. So if there's a wetland that's adjacent to a navigable water and it's indistinguishable as far as its connection, perhaps the wetland would be considered a water of the United States. If it's distinguishable, you know, it's not directly adjacent or there's some break in the connection, then that may make sense that it's not. But that's what we're doing at this point, Charlie, is hearing people's voices. And that's so important in rulemaking, making sure the voices of folks are heard all across the country, because typically agencies in Washington, D.C., whether it's the EPA or any other agency, they just get on this rulemaking process and they're not talking to farmers and ranchers, oil and gas, developers, you know, others across the country in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, Utah, Minnesota, the rest.
Do you also get any input from other officials, for instance, but maybe not exclusively, Governor Fallon, the DEQ, some of those other agencies?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll see the governor and the officials at DEQ and others on Friday. And each of the states that we've attended, those folks have been there in attendance. We've had dialogue with them and have continued dialogue with them. They live it every day. You know, we can learn from the expertise and the resources of the DEQ in Oklahoma, just like the DEQ in Utah. And it's so helpful to us in helping us inform our decision-making.
This seems to be a little change in attitude from my point of view, right, wrong, or otherwise, that you're making a distinction not to make decisions in a vacuum, to look at the facts and implications that whatever decision you make will eventually have on others.
You know, it's actually as you look at how rulemaking is supposed to be conducted, you're supposed to propose a rule and publish it. And then people can look at it and say, well, there's a concern here. We'd like to offer some input there. And it's a dialogue. And then we're supposed to take that dialogue, those comments, and then help inform ourselves as we finalize a rule. That's not been happening the last several years. The agency skipped that process. And so the voices of people all over the country, Bartlesville to Oklahoma City to Salt Lake City, Utah, you know, they weren't really able to express concerns about ephemeral drainage ditches or dry creek beds or those kinds of issues to say that should not be considered a water of the United States. I mean, navigability is key. You know, because of the Interstate Commerce Clause of the Constitution. So we've got to look at the case law. We've got to look at the text. But these factors that go toward navigability and these other perennial issues around it, you know, we're learning, and that's important to do.
You made a visit to Northeast Oklahoma a few months ago. I don't remember the exact date. You probably have it memorized. You were in Osage County, Bird Creek specifically.
Yes.
All salt water being mixed in, some fish kill. Those are the symptoms. I don't know all the causes yet.
Yeah, the salinity levels were high, elevated temperatures in the water, and frankly, the previous administration, the EPA had not been very responsive. It had been going on for a month-long process. Concerns were being raised by private property owners in the area that it was not being adequately responded to. I heard about it, got our Region 6 folks engaged very quickly. They came up, and then I came on site as well, and we made some decisions on the site there, actually, while I was in town in Osage County to address some of the concerns, and we're continuing to make sure we're responsive. So the private property owners in that area, I think, are much more confident that the EPA is responding to the salinity levels and the increased temperatures.
Two jurisdictional areas in Osage County because of tribal rights. As I remember it, please correct me if I'm wrong, the Osage Nation also has some say in sometimes instead of the EPA.
Yes, I mean, I think you do get into some jurisdictional issues there because of the mineral rights being reserved to the tribe and the BIA's trustee status. You have, you know, DEQ, state DEQ jurisdiction right alongside of EPA jurisdiction. But really here, it's not a question of jurisdiction. The EPA, we can truly respond to this matter. And in my estimation, in 2016, the EPA was not being as responsive. And so we made it a priority. That's the reason I spent time on the ground. I can't recall the date. You commend me too much there. But I was in town with officials, and we are making progress and continue to monitor it. It may need to, you know, obviously be back on site to ensure that progress is being made.
I've heard the term back to basics being associated with some of the things you're doing. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think the agency as a whole, when you look at our office, it's almost like the Department of Defense. We have an air division, we have a land division, and we have a water division. And we also have
Army,
air,
Navy,
land,
and
water.
Air Force. Sounds
yeah, that's
good
right.
To me.
And we've got a chemical office as well. But when you get back to the basics and the core mission of the agency, air attainment, with respect to air quality standards under the National Ambient Air Quality Standards Program, we've really made great progress as a country. 65% reduction in those pollutants that we regulate under that program since 1980. We've also grown our economy rather substantially, as you know, since 1980. So we really, as a country, I think do it better than anybody in the world with respect to finding the balance between growth and in ensuring environmental stewardship. But in water, we're looking at water infrastructure. The agency in the past, when you look at Gold King, Colorado, and you look at Flint, Michigan, the agency wasn't as responsive, in my estimation, as they should have been in addressing those situations. So we're trying to focus on water quality and water infrastructure. In our land office, we've got Superfund sites across the country that have land waste associated with it, uranium or lead or other types of things in the soil. And we have 1,336 of those sites. Many of those sites, Charlie, have been on the national priority list for decades, 30 to 40 years. Actually, since the inception of the CERCLA program, Superfund program in the early 1980s, they've had these sites, and they haven't been cleaned up. That doesn't sound like much of a priority. So when we talk about getting back to the basics, we're setting metrics, goals. Where are we going to be on air quality 2 years from now, 4 years from now? How do we improve attainment in meeting those air quality standards? How do we invest in water infrastructure to ensure safe drinking water for our citizens across the country? You know, how do we, those 1,336 sites, how do we improve and get those sites off and get those sites remediated across the country so communities can enjoy those areas once again? So that's what we mean by getting back to the basics.
The administration is barely 6 months into their term. If you subtract your confirmation service, you're hardly there yet. So far, how do you feel about the job you're getting done?
I mean, encouraged. I think there's optimism across the country. I mean, we have a positive environmental agenda. I just shared some of that with you about things we're focused upon. I just released this week a 30-day task force. I charged some leadership at the agency as I came in to give me a report on the Superfund program to find out how we do better. I gave them 30 days. They came back with 42 recommendations. We announced that this week. So we really are making, in my view, tremendous progress. We're at pre-1994 levels as a country with our CO2 footprint. Nobody knows that, primarily because of hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling because of conversion to natural gas. The environmental left won't tell you that. But we're making great progress, Charlie. But we're also providing regulatory clarity. Because when you look at the last administration, whether it was in the Clean Power Plan or the Wires of the United States or multiple rules, they enlarged their authority. And they also, I think, were distrustful of citizens, private property owners, states, industry. You know, just spending time on campus with Phillips 66 today, the amount of money they're spending to improve, you know, air quality and water quality, R&D, lots of money. They're doing that because they're good citizens. They're doing that because they care. And I think the agency historically started from a premise to say, we don't think people care about that in Oklahoma or Texas or Colorado. We're going to have to be paternalistic. And then they displace authority. They don't engage in discussion. And that's the wrong-headed approach. So we're getting back to the basics of partnership, not adversarial relationships, and achieving good outcomes together.
Sounds like a reason for a good optimism.
Yes, encouraging.
Scott Pruitt, I know you have a busy schedule, and I know you have all kinds of travel from at least from here to Utah, but the other 48 states probably somewhere along the line. Thank you for visiting this morning.
It's good to be with you, Charlie, and back in Oklahoma.
And thank you for coming in. And again, check out the EPA website, all kinds of information there that we, I'm sure, did not get into today. That's our time with EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt.